for Wednesday, May 2nd. And we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 707. And first, I'd like to invite Representative Berger, since she's so graciously taking time out of her committee to come here and address us. And I don't see any other representatives yet. Welcome, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. I will be so brief that you'll be very happy to see me leave, because there's a lot of folks behind me who would like a chance up here. Let me start with good bill should pass. How's that for brief? And 36 years in the making. I know you're all aware that it's taken a long time to get this far with any changes to our iconic battle bill. It means so much to so many that it's very hard to mess with an icon, but in my opinion, it is time to mess with it, and Representative Burley has just shown the reason why.
Did you guys coordinate this?
Who would have thought in 1971 that we would be drinking water from a bottle in the numbers that we are today? But the fact of the matter that we are, and water is not in our current bottle bill, and I would like it to be. And I think we need to address that right away. Also in this bill, I know you know, is a task force to look at a systematic change. If we are going to do our bottle bill differently, we need to do it with careful thought and in a measured way. And this task force can look at that, and I think it's a very good part of the bill. I would agree that there are some definitions that might need some clarity in this bill, but I would ask you to keep the basic provisions intact. This is a carefully has a little bit for some that everybody's going to love and a little bit that everybody's going to hate in it, and that's sort of the measure of a good balanced bill. But I would hope that the bill that comes out of here is a good, solid, sort of well-defined piece that looks very much like the piece that came in. And I think that you could all feel good, and we can all feel good in this legislature if we can pass this bill. It would be a historic thing to have something this important, as someone said, this close to the DNA of Oregon. Be passed out of this legislature. Thank you, and I'm available for questions. However, I am due in revenue.
Thank you, Representative Berger. I appreciate all your hard work on this. Are there any questions for a representative before we release her to go back to our committee?
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next I'd like to ask Bob Danko if he could come up. And Bob is going to provide us with an overview, a bottle bill 101, so to speak, for those who are not familiar with how Oregon's bottle bill works and the history of it. And Bob Danko has been around almost about as long as bottle bill, right?
That's scary. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. Being passed out to you is my testimony, although it's really just a background on the bottom bill, on the bottle bill, and getting us from when it started to today, and also a one pager on the highlights of the bill before you today, SB 707. Madam Chair and members of the committee, as we know, the bottle bill passed in 1971, and here we are 36 years later. It has an amazing track record. When you look at $31.1 billion containers being returned for deposit in those 36 years. We're talking about an amazing amount of recycling that has occurred because of our bottle bill, energy savings, of course, and even now we can calculate the carbon dioxide equivalents that we've reduced because of the bottle bill. Several things have changed since the bottle bill came into being. We have distributors forming the co-ops or the joint ventures to pick up the containers from the stores. We have the refillable bottles, which dominated the bottle bill in 1971, not being around anymore. We have the growth in the beverage containers that one of the reasons we're here today, the growth in the water bottles, the juices, the sports drinks. And we have what is commonly now known as reverse vending machines, where when you return your containers to the stores, often you place them into a machine to get your refund. And we finally, we of course have the nickel deposit as we had 36 years ago. Of course, apply inflation to that, and it would be about a quarter. But we still have the nickel refund value. One thing I always like to add when talking about the bottle bill, there is no requirement to pay a deposit. The only requirement in the law is that there be a refund value on the container. The deposit has been put there to make the system work, but the law only requires a refund value. I've included a couple attachments. Attachment one in the testimony is what we have found with disposal of water bottles into our state's landfills. The growth in the disposal of water bottles has been amazing when you look at the last 10 years. Starting out in 1998, we're in the 30 million bottles a year range, where now, at least in 2005, we're at 126 million containers being disposed of. And 2007, I assume it'd be even higher than that. So it's really to look at the growth of the disposal of water bottles over the last 10 years, one thing. The second page of my attachment is just the bottle bill system. I won't go into it, how it works, but this is the best graphic we have been able to come up with that describes the flow of the money and the flow of the container. But I think all of us have practiced with the bottle bill. All of us have taken back containers. All of us have gotten our refunds. And I think generally people understand how the system works. There are other systems, other states, bottle bill systems in other states. Some do it like we do. Michigan does it like we do, except they're the only state that has a 10-cent deposit. They also collect the unredeemed deposits, and I'm sure we'll talk about more about unredeemed deposits as other people testify today. But Maine and Vermont and Massachusetts have a system where they have redemption centers, and distributors pay an extra handling fee to fund those redemption centers. We of course, in Oregon, do not have redemption centers per se, separate from the stores, and that is another item that you'll probably hear about today. In British Columbia and Alberta, they use what I'd call an industry organization to handle the details of the bottle bill, deposits and redemption centers. Government essentially stays out of it up there. So there's other ways to do bottle bills. We were the first, and others have followed us, and all seems like tweaking what we came up with. So today, the redeeming rate under our bottle bill we estimate to be about 78% based on the amount of containers in the landfills. It started at over 90%. So what that says is that we are starting to lose a little bit in our bottle bill. Part of that probably has to do with the nickel staying a nickel. Part of that has to do with some people not maybe liking the system we have now with reverse vending machines as much as they liked the system before, where you got an assistant to help you handle it. But we're starting to lose some on the percent being recycled under the bottle bill. I always want to say, of course, even at 78%, we're well above what would be collected for similar containers at curbside. The curbside, the recycling rate for containers is in the 30s. And so here we're still at 80. So this is still far and away a good system and accomplishing a lot. But we're here today because, of course, I think it's time to take a look at maybe tweaking it some. The most important attachment I think I've given you is attachment 3 in the testimony. The reason I think this is important is it shows the amount of containers being disposed of and how many are being redeemed. Presently, the bottle bill covers beer and soft drinks, carbonated soft drinks. And over a billion containers, this is 2005 data, over a billion containers were redeemed. When you look at adding water, we're talking about 126 million containers being disposed of in 2005. If you go to the next category, juices and teas and other sports drinks and so on, you go and get another 138 million. So you see, water is still a small part of what's being returned. If water were added to the bottle bill, it'd still be a small part of what's being returned now to the stores. 10 to 12% we would add to what's being returned. If you do the next step, go to juices, teas, and sports drinks, you add another 10 or 12% of what's being returned to the stores, adding to that amount going to the stores. There's other information on this page. If you make certain assumptions and so on, you can determine how many total containers will be redeemed and what the redeeming rate will be. Attachment 4, finally, is the data that we have on the amount of containers we are finding in the landfill that citizens have paid a deposit on. In other words, this is the unredeemed deposit monies. And right now, we have found the equivalent of, $15 million a year of deposits being disposed of in our landfills. If we add water, certain assumptions, the unredeemed deposits being disposed of in our landfills will add another $3 or $4 million to that. So that's the amount of money that the equivalent of being disposed of in our landfills of what people have paid a deposit on. I'll pause there before I talk a little bit about the existing bill if people have any questions.
Madam Chair, a quick question on this topic.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you. What would be the value of the beer and soft drink that is recycled at curbside, say, but not redeemed? So, again, getting to this question of this point of unredeemed deposit.
Well, if you look on the back page, attachment 4, we have three columns, but the first column is the disposed of deposits in the landfill, $12.7 million worth. The next number is the $3.2 million of containers, deposit containers that, deposit been paid on, but being recycled at curbside so the person doesn't get the deposit back. That's another $3 million. That's where you get to the $15.9 million.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you. Any questions on this part of Mr. Danka's presentation? Okay. Mr. Danka, since Representative Lim is sitting behind you, what I'd like to do, and are you in committee right now, Representative Lim? So I'd like to ask him to come up, and then if you can continue after Representative's testifying, then we'll continue your testimony, Mr. Danka. Representative, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking a break from your committee to come in and share your thoughts with us on Senate Bill 707.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Lim, state representative from District 50, and especially thank you for allowing me to speak to you before anyone else. I do appreciate that. I'm speaking as a small guy for the small people. And especially many immigrants, when they come here, they usually buy small mom-and-pop grocery stores, in which they work about 16 hours a day, husband and wife together, without any employees. And then they have a great concern about this Senate Bill 707. Personally, I support 707. There's no question about it, but the content concerning the 50 bottles, if the facilities has less than 5,000 square foot, then they have to take up the 50 bottles a day. And if I may, Madam Chair, can I bring samples of the 50 bottles over there? This is the 50 bottles one person can bring a day, as currently is written. And then if it's 10 people, 500 bottles. Of course, everyone is not going to bring 50 bottles. That I asked the grocery store owners and how often the people come the store pick them up. It's about once or 2 weeks. That they once in 2 weeks. Some of them maybe 1 week, but generally about once in 2 weeks. Simply, they don't have enough spaces in their store. They need to store all the inventories and plus waters, and then neighbors and the homeless people and others, when they shop at the big shopping center, and then they bring the bottle to the neighbors because they don't want to carry that load to the big supermarket. So small mom-and-pop grocery store owners, they are victimized by this beer. And at the same time, when the clink other companies pick them up the bottle, they charge $5. And plus, when husband and wife working together, when the bottle brings in, they don't have time to count it. So whatever they take it, is it 10 bottles, 20 bottles, they have to take it. And then when the company pick them up, they cannot count, they don't have time to count it. They pick them up, even though it's about the 500 bottles and cans, they can say it's 450. So they are losing two times. So we got a problem in this beer. Somehow we need to fix it. And I'm not going to speak too long, but if I may, Madam Chair, can I bring one of the members of the Korean Grocers Association? He has a 3-point like to testify. Can I bring him up with him at this time, ma'am?
Do you know if he signed up on the testimony?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah. My preference would be if we could just have him come up after we've done the overview of the bill, because we still haven't done a complete overview of the bill, and I will certainly bring him up here shortly.
Okay, that's your choice, ma'am. And please mindful, they own a small grocery store. They need to go back as soon as possible. And so if you give them any opportunity, I do appreciate it. And so
absolutely.
With that, and I'm going to propose an amendment. It's in the process now. And so when you have another public hearing, I'm sure you will have a work session. I'd like to bring it up, and I'd like to discuss with you and the members of the committee.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions for a representative?
Just really quick, Madam Chair. And this question is not directed at you, Representative Lim, but I think you raise a very good point when you held up the bag of 50 bottles. And I guess I throw this out to you, sir, or to anyone else who will answer it when they come up. Over the last 36 years, has there been any conversation or discussion or even legislation to provide some form of compensation or incentive to the grocers for the service they provide? To me, it seems as if, Madam Chair, there's a way to create a win-win on this. We just haven't quite got over that little hump yet. And so as folks testify, I'd love to hear their thoughts on the historical nature of that question.
Yeah, Madam Chair, may I respond?
Absolutely.
In my understanding, I used to be a grocery store owner about 3 years, about 35 years ago. So that I do understand a little bit. But we have been talking about increasing since the inception of this bill has been always 5 cents. In the current terms, it should be about 25 cents at this time. But I don't think legislators have a will to increase any of this amount. Currently, just 5 cents, that's as is written. And they are not compensated at all. At least if they could get maybe 7 cents and charge 7 cents, at least if they could keep 2 cents, they're not going to make any money out of it. At least they might be able to cover some expenses. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a very prudent approach. But 2 cents even increase is considered a tax increase. We legislators have a political will to get it done. And that's the issue every legislator has to think about it.
I would vote for that tax increase.
Okay.
You heard it here first.
Okay. And probably last.
You're going to play that tape back. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
And I will call him up in a few minutes here. Mr. Danko, if you could come back up, please. Thank you for the interruption. I apologize for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Bob Danko, DEQ. I was just going to take a minute to walk through the major provisions of 707, and I guess I want to qualify my comments. DEQ really has no role to play directly in the bottle bill. It's administered by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and not DEQ. Our role, of course, is that, you know, we are directed to lead the recycling effort in the state, and we are also directed to keep track of numbers and so on. So I have a lot of information, a lot of data, but DEQ does not at this time have a direct role in the bottle bill. I passed out a one-pager on the highlights of 707, and I'll just briefly go through that. I'm sure many of the testifiers behind me will go into specific details and about each part and what they like and don't like about it. First, and maybe foremost, the bill adds water and flavored water to the beverage covered by Oregon's bottle bill. Secondly, the bill narrows the inclusion of the plastic beverage containers to only what we call PETE. Those are the number one plastic, which is the water bottle Representative Cannon has. It's too bad they make the number so tiny on the bottom, but most of the single-service plastic beverage containers are number ones. In fact, we've started searching for water bottle that isn't in number one, because there used to be one, and maybe somebody following me has found it. But to our knowledge, there really aren't very many, if any, water bottles that aren't in number one. Thirdly, the bill excludes cartons, foil pouches, and drink boxes. That was never an issue when the bill covered beer and carbonated soft drinks. But it could become an issue when other beverage containers are added. The bill requires what I call bigger dealers, larger stores greater than 5,000 square feet, to take back the kind of containers they sell. Right now the law says stores have to take back the kind, size, and brand of containers they sell. This broadens what big stores have to take back to be the kind of containers they sell. It also then, back to the previous representative's comments about the 50 containers, right now the law says a store, no matter how big, has to take back 144 containers per person per day. This bill cuts that 144 down to the 50 that was referenced before, for the smaller stores. So that was recognized on the Senate side, and the change was made from 144 down to the 50. There's very direct language requiring distributors and manufacturers to pay the refunds to and to collect the containers from the stores. Very direct language, making sure that the stores get the service from the distributors and manufacturers. And finally, the bill does create the task force Representative Berger referenced, four legislators and five other members during the interim to study what I'd say the bigger picture, the bigger systems of collection, beverage container collection and refund. And the report is due back, I believe, November 1st of 2008.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Danko. Are there any questions before we move on to the many witnesses that we have signed up here to testify today?
I just have one quick question, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith?
In your handout here, Bob, on point number four, it says, requires bigger dealers, stores 5,000 feet or greater, to take back the kind of containers they sell. What if they don't sell the type of containers that are returned to them?
If they don't sell the kind of container?
Correct.
They are not obligated to take that container back.
So if I'm a Thriftway, 15,000 square feet, and someone brings to me a container from Fred Meyer's, I'm not obligated to take that back?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Smith, today, when the law says kind, size, and brand, that would be the case. Under the change here, and it's on my list to, of course, clarify to make sure that this is the intent. Kind of container means it means water, or it means carbonated drink, or it means malt beverage. So if that store sells water bottles, it has to take back water bottles. If that store sells pop, it has to take back pop containers. If it sells all three, it has to take back all three.
Follow-up question.
Follow-up.
In the community of Heppner, I have a Red Apple. It's probably 6,000 square feet. We also have a lot of folks who, for recreational purposes and for economy purposes, go out of town. They go to the Tri-Cities in Washington, and they go to Costco, and they purchase big tubs of bottled water. They come back. If they take those into the Red Apple, mm-hmm. the Red Apple would be obligated to take it. The question I have is, who would pay the Red Apple?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, first of all, the OLCC has adopted some rules, very few rules, but some rules to implement the existing bottle bill. And one of the parts of the rules says that a store isn't obligated to take back containers if they believe the container was purchased out of state.
Let me correct my comment. Pendleton. I went to Walmart in Pendleton.
That's not
else. Finally, right after business, into
where it ought to be. Put the dollars in the right district. Into Pendleton. they didn't participate in receiving the deposit, but
right.
they are going to be obligated to give the refund.
Right. And remember, the store will be made whole by the distributor or manufacturer. So even though a store takes back more containers than they sell, the distributor or manufacturer is obligated to pay the deposit to the store when the picks up the container. So the store will be revenue neutral on the deposit no matter how many they take in. That doesn't mean that the store isn't impacted because they have to handle all that material.
Sure.
But for the nickel purpose, the deposit purpose, it's revenue neutral.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on that, Bob, under that same scenario, you've got a distributor that's picking up at this store in Heppner, but you have a totally separate distributor that's picking up and dropping off in Pendleton. Somebody's left hanging, holding the bag on this thing, aren't they? The store in Heppner might be kept whole, but the distributor's going to be out the money.
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, today, under the existing law, distributors vary in the amount of deposits they get to keep, called unredeemed deposits, and the deposits they pay out. And I'm sure the people testifying behind me will say that some distributors end up maybe paying out almost all the what they get in unredeemed deposits back in the deposit stream, where other distributors get to keep a lot of the unredeemed deposits, and it's a significant amount of money. So it's not equal. Some distributors do better than others in this system.
Follow up.
Thank you. One of the things that I've been a little curious about, when you take these containers back to these machines that more times than not, it seems like, at least my experience, they're not working, they crush them or break them up. Now, I get a nickel, okay, but when the distributor comes and picks up this bale of crushed, shredded glass or plastic or whatever it is, they don't know how many containers are in that. So how many nickels do they get?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, again, behind me, folks will be able to more detail how this works. But those reverse vending machines read barcodes. And they count containers. And then they take that information that they read off the barcodes and categorizes it into different distributors. So For instance, in the Portland area, a company that we all call CRINK, Container Recovery Inc., services most of the reverse vending machines. They then divide up what they collect in those machines and bill back to the distributors the amount that went through their machine based on the barcodes.
One last question.
And then we'll need to start calling up other witnesses.
Of course, I think I just slipped my mind what I was going to ask you about was the, if I understood what you said, and I'm having a little hard time reading this, too, because we're adding and taking language out also, but if I understand this correctly, the existing law says that a store may refuse a container if it's not their brand. So, for example, Fred Meyer doesn't have to take back the Safeway soda can. Is that correct?
Correct.
Under current law. But we are going to remove that allowance.
Correct.
One last quick question, Madam Chair.
Okay, final question.
It's important to keep
And Mr. Danka will be back, and we will bring him back tomorrow should we have to, but there are some folks I know that can come back tomorrow. I want to make sure that we get them.
Just a quick question here. I want to go back to my Red Apple and Hepner. If I'm the owner of the Red Apple and Hepner and I sell Coca-Cola and I have a Coca-Cola distributorship, and I sell Pepsi-Cola and I have a Pepsi-Cola distributorship, and someone brings me in a Walmart water, how am I going to know which distributor to go to get compensated for that nickel that I gave out?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is part of the what was going to play itself out in the implementation stage of the bill, because it's going to be very difficult for stores to go to each individual manufacturer, even though it's the manufacturer or the distributor's responsibility to go to that store and get that container. Walmart would be responsible under this bill to get that container from that store. Walmart's not going to probably want to do that, so they're going to sign up with the distributors or an organization like CRINK or some other organization to do that service for it. So it's not your store that's hanging there. It's Walmart has to go get that container from that store. So that's why I think you're going to see folks working together, signing up together to make an efficient system. Just like when it started out, we didn't have CRINK in the Portland area and up and down the valley serving all the distributors and picking up the containers. That was evolved out of necessity, and that's what's going to happen with your water bottle.
Thank you. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Danko. I know we will have more questions for you, so don't stray too far. Okay, with that, I'm going to start calling up folks actually three at a time because we have a lot of people who'd like to testify. I'm going to try to make sure that everybody who can't come back tomorrow gets to come, on Friday, has the opportunity to testify today because we have 2 pages worth of folks and we're going to limit testimony to 3 minutes each. And I will ask you if you have written testimony to please provide it to our committee assistant and not read your testimony, but just highlight the key points. So first I'm going to start with, we're going to try to just do this as expeditiously as possible, and I'm going to call up Mike Reed from Winco and Melinda Merrill from Fred Meyer. Actually, and we'll have Michael Roth come up. Do you mind all coming up all together? We've got 3 seats. Yeah, I'll make sure I get the four away, folks. We only have a couple. We're over 100 miles. Okay, welcome. Thank you for coming back, as I know some of you have already testified on the other side, but just a reminder to state your name for the record, and we do have a little stopwatch here, and we'll try to give you a heads up.
My name is Michael Reed. I'm Vice President of Public and Legal Affairs for Winco Foods, headquartered in Boise, Idaho. We operate 16 discount supermarkets and 2 distribution facilities in the state of Oregon. Forgive me, I've lost my voice trying to speak on this issue on the other side. I would like to have had prepared testimony, but frankly, couldn't figure out how to put it together on this particular bill. All of the cogent arguments where we have good data and the kinds of things that would be concrete for the members of the committee to listen to have unfortunately been largely ignored. No one seems to care about the health issues, sanitation issues, space issues, handling issues, efficiency issues, cost issues, more efficient systems, the fact that beverage containers only represent roughly 1% of the total waste stream. We've tried to offer a viable alternative, but it's fallen on deaf ears, unfortunately. So we're faced with this bill. Insofar as we have to deal with it, there are three things that I would urge the committee to consider. A couple of them have already been brought to the attention of the committee by previous testimony. One is this distinction between the current law, where we currently have to take back the kind, brand, and so on that Mr. Representative Smith was asking about. The change would now require us to bring back any and all. We simply don't have the space to accommodate that. The gentleman that represented the Korean grocers indicated how big 50 bottles was. In our case, it's 144 per person, and we can't currently feed these into the machines because they're not currently under contract, and the machines won't read the barcode, so we will be forced back into the system that we had in the 70s with these additional containers, that being a hand-sorting kind of a system. So we really need to keep the current state of the law on that particular issue. So in other words, do not accept that particular amendment. We should only be required to take back what we actually sell. Secondly, the definition of flavored water, I think in section one, is it? There is no definition. What is flavored water? There are some products that call themselves flavored water. That's fine insofar as it goes. But is juice flavored water? Is Gatorade and Powerade flavored water? Are teas flavored water? Are Sobe drinks flavored water? We don't know. And it's not defined in the bill. The simpler thing to do would be to eliminate flavored water altogether. That would be our encouragement, that we stick just with water if we're going to do anything at all. So just water, just the product that we currently sell. If we do have to take back what we don't sell, we're going to be forced to chase the nickel. Representative Smith indicated, you know, what distributor do you go to? What wholesaler, so on? Well, we'll have to figure that out, and we'll be chasing nickels forever. So we would suggest an amendment to the bill to consider putting all of the nickels in one place so that we only have to go to one place to get our redemption on the nickel. We would suggest that the state control that. I don't have a specific suggestion as to how that would be implemented, but I think the state ought to control the nickels all the way through the system so that we have one place to go in order to get the nickel back. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Reed. We appreciate you coming all the way from Idaho to share your thoughts. And we're going to go through all the testimony and then see if there's any questions. So, Ms. Merrill.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Members of the committee, I'm Melinda Merrill. I'm the Director of Public Affairs for Fred Meyer Stores. We have 50 stores in Oregon. We employ 13,000 Oregonians. We provide living wages and health and welfare benefits for themselves and their families. And we are celebrating our 85th year of business this year in Oregon. I want to make one thing very clear today. Fred Meyer Stores supports the expansion of the bottle bill to include water. We know it's the right thing to do. We know it's what our customers want. And we recognize the need. But we do not support the current structure of Senate Bill 707. Requiring the retailers to take back everything we sell and expressly omitting the distributors from that requirement makes us responsible for getting rid of other people's product. And this legislature has consistently told us that we need to be responsible for the product that we sell, and we have done that fairly well for the last 30 years. Under the current law, as we've discussed, anyone who sells aluminum cans or bottles takes back the brands that they sell. It's simply the reality of convenience that there are a handful of retailers who take back the majority of those bottles and cans. And part of that is because we have fulfilled our obligation to make it easy for Oregonians to comply with that bottle bill by providing the reverse vending machines. We have an average of 4 vending machines at each of our 50 stores. Some of them have more than that. Many of our competitors have not done that, and they seem perfectly happy to make the profit off of the product. And some of them have quite willingly taken the popular public stance of being in support of the bottle bill this session, but when it comes to the filthy and very expensive task of making it easy for their customers to return those bottles, they leave that up to a small handful of us who have reverse vending machines. Here's the position I want to illustrate a little bit of what Section 2 of 707 puts us in, the requirement that we take back everything we sell. Take back everything, even what we don't sell. Customer customers will bring back all their bottles, the ones they get at Nordstrom, the ones they get at their spa, the ones they get when they go car shopping, when they go to Babies R Us, and the ones from Red Apple or Ray's Food Place when they go to the coast for the weekend. They'll bring them back to us, and they will have given those businesses the nickel for their deposit, and we'll have to give those customers the nickel back for a product that we know we didn't sell because it says Walmart on it or it says Nordstrom on it. Then we have to figure out what to do with those bottles. We see four choices with this scenario. We can call all those businesses, as long as the bottles are marked with their name, and ask them to come pick up their bottles, and then we can store them somewhere until they come and get them, which I suspect will be a very, very long time. We can rent a truck and pay an employee to drive them all back to all of those businesses, which would probably require at least one full-time employee at every single one of our 50 stores. We can pay the distributors a fee to take away those products. There are some waters that aren't handled by a distributor. Our own Fred Meyer brand comes directly to our warehouse. So we would have to pay the distributors a fee, join Crink, or make them our distributor somehow. Or we can simply send those brands that we don't sell to the landfill. And I got to be honest with you. This is the cheapest and easiest solution, and it defeats the purpose of the bill, obviously. It's not the right thing to do. It's not what anybody wants to do. But I got to believe that that's going to happen sometimes because the alternatives are very expensive. Here's another scenario that I admit is unlikely to occur, but it illustrates sort of the ludicrousness of the way it's set up.
And Melinda, you have about 10 seconds left, so I'm going to ask you to wrap
up,
please.
I think most importantly is to remove the requirement that we take back everything we don't sell. We will take back the water that we sell. We will continue to take back the brands of soda and beer that we sell. But it's a handful of retailers that are going to end up with the majority of this on their shoulders. And I think a better way to do it would be to urge consumers to take those brands that they can't take to a reverse vending machine to their curbside recycling and take care of it that way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair, Dean Fielder, and members of the committee, I'll be very brief. My name is Michael Roth. I'm one of the 870 employees of Ross Fresh Markets. We're here in Salem, Oregon. Proponents of the Section 2 of the bill will tell you that don't feel bad about requiring neighborhood grocers like Ross and Safeway and Thriftway to redeem the water bottles of competing store brands that they don't sell. They may tell you that the people will spend the money in our stores. I have the data right here to prove that that's not true. Currently, where we don't have to redeem other folks' bottles and cans, only 45.88% of the money was spent at Ross. This is three stores, the 15th of the month over the first 4 months of the year. And 54% of redeemed bottle cash will walk out the door. So we pay the expense of the Crink machines and the cash flow and all that, and they spend the money somewhere else. Now Section 2 wants us to take back brands specific to other stores or products that we don't even sell. Someone else will make the profit for the sale and we'll pay the cost of redemption. Members of the committee, I know you are honorable people, and I trust you will not allow Section 2 of the Senate Bill 707 to stay as it is. There's two choices, basically to echo Melinda and go leave the law the way it is today, that you only have to redeem what you currently sell to help the store in Heppner, and two, institute a handling fee to cover our cost of redeeming other companies' proprietary brands. I appreciate your time and listening to the point of view of your neighborhood grocer.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. Appreciate it. Representative Burley and Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Melinda, I wanted to hear your last comment.
Well, it sets up, if a junior high school sells an aluminum can, juice, some of them sell Coke. I think a lot of them aren't selling Coke anymore, but say they sell Ocean Spray juice.
Took care of that.
They have to take back any aluminum can. A junior high school has to take back a beer can. Now, I realize that it's silly to think that someone's going to bring their beer cans back to a junior high school, but I think that just illustrates that this hasn't been thought through, and it needs to, it's set up to fail, and I think it needs to be set up to make those of us who are committed to making it work, make it work. And we have systems in place to make it work right now, and this is really going to toy with those systems.
Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to ask a naive question. If I open a can of worms, please feel free to let me know immediately.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be the first time.
What would be the drawback of taking a deposit from a nickel to a dime and allowing our grocers to keep a nickel? as compensation for their service.
I would love it. go ahead.
It still wouldn't be a good thing to bring back into the food store, what we're bringing back into the food store, but to have
right.
a handling allowance that would compensate us for the cost would be more than welcome. Certainly, we'd be enthused about that development.
I would just love to hear from other folks in the audience as they testify, if they just address that issue as well.
I do want to know on bottled water. If you get the deposit, well, on any of these products, but bottled water in particular, where the cost is so low, if you added a 10-cent deposit, what would that do to consumption patterns and a number of other things in terms of the increased cost?
Well, I can't believe someone pays $1.29 for this.
It's more expensive than gasoline, isn't it?
I think Representative, not for long. I think Representative Cannon has a question, and I have a quick question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if any of your companies, to your knowledge, have supported the creation of a redemption center rather than taking back the product in your store. My reading of the law, current law, allows grocers and others to set up redemption centers to collect the product, and then OLCC could approve it if it was convenient and did what it's supposed to under the law. Have any of your companies been involved in that project or worked with each other to set up redemption centers to move it out of the store?
Well, I've met with some folks that are for the redemption centers and really tried to understand their point of view, and I think the task force, that would be one of their main charges, is to find a way to move the products out of a grocery store into a redemption center. Or, you know, I wish the task force would meet before the bottle bill would be amended.
Yes, follow up, Madam Chair. I don't think my reading of the law is that we don't require a task force or legislative action for grocers who are currently, as you have well explained, incur a lot of the responsibility under this bill, under the law, to take it out of the stores, make sure it continues to be convenient, but provide clean, safe places for people to drop off their water. And I'm just curious, given the history of this, why, and the concern that you have about it being in grocery stores, why we haven't seen that. At least I haven't seen that.
Cost.
It's expensive.
And in a word, it's very expensive. Even at 5 cents per container, it probably wouldn't even begin to cover the cost of setting up and operating redemption centers. It's a good idea in theory, and if you're willing to appropriate from the general fund sufficient, we'd be happy to look at it.
Well, Madam Chair, is there cost involved to the current? I mean, it's more costly than what it costs you currently? Because I've heard some numbers floating around about what the current system costs grocers, and I really do want to understand, because I realize that this system is built on the backs of grocery stores. And so I really do want to understand what the costs are, both of the current system as well as if we did someday look at a different kind, what that would be.
Representative Cannon, if I may, I'd refer you to Kevin Deatley, who's in the room and prepared to testify. He's maybe one of the nation's experts on everything connected with these kinds of systems and bills. But the cost really is prohibitive. You're right, though. The cost to us is significant already. Under the current state of the bottle bill, we're paying about $200,000 per store per year to accommodate the bottle bill as it exists today. With the expansion, we'll probably increase that by at least half again.
Thank you.
And did you want to follow up and then we'll move on to the next?
I am a small grocer, but I may get shanghaied for this, but I made the statement that I would be more than willing to, all the money that we currently spend to redeem cans, I would be more than happy to give to the DEQ or some other agency to take this over. I don't want a free lunch by any means. I like clean roads. I like clean parks, but, you know, I just think it's a health issue.
Madam Chair and Representative Cannon, I'd like to just follow that up. I agree. We would take the money that we spend and help that, but I think there's a responsibility under, or if it's Oregon's bottle bill, I think there's a responsibility for some assistance from the state and from the people of Oregon in that, too. We're not shoving these things into their wallets. They're purchasing them. Our consumers want them, and I think there's a whole solution, not just our responsibility to build redemption centers that are convenient for the whole state.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming in here today and sharing your comments and concerns. And just a reminder, folks, if you have a cell phone or a BlackBerry, if you can make sure and turn it off because it interferes with our audio system. And I'm going to call up the next panel, and I'll make sure to get everybody who's come from over 100 miles. And also, I will, at about 2:30, find out who cannot come back on Friday, because we will be having another hearing on Friday, a full 2 hours on Friday as well. So I just want to make that announcement so folks know if we don't get through everybody today, we'll make sure and get through everybody on Friday. I'd like to call up, Edward Nam and Susan Hess from Hood River. Susan here?
Yes.
see who else is from 100 miles. I think we got that. And is Steve Emery? Steve here?
Yes.
Okay. And please state your name for the record. We'll start on this side.
I'm Susan Hess. I'm from Hood River, Oregon. The beautiful city of Hood River, I might add. I walk from my home to my office every day in Hood River. Hood River is a very small town. And I took to taking a plastic bag along with me because I find plastic bags, which is another issue that I hope the legislature will take up at some stage. And I just started picking up litter along the way. And every single solitary day, I fill up 1 to 2 bags of a grocery bag full of litter every day. Much of it, these bottles and cans that you see. Obviously, other things, too. So I just came to add my voice for the hundreds of us that do that, that stop beside ski trails, that walk along mountain roads, that walk along the beaches. I've never done the Solve Beach thing, but every time I go to the beach, you know, I take plastic bags along with me and I pick it up. We moved here 40 years ago to live for a year, and we fell in love with this place. We fell in love with Oregon, and we've never left. And we sort of choose to do, that's my thing, to say that I take care of this place, and I do what I can. I can't solve world hunger. I can't make life fair for everyone, but I can do that one thing. So I just came today to represent all of those of us who take our time as we walk here and there to try to do that, to try to take care of the land, to try to leave it as beautiful, you know, for all the rest of the people and all of our children that come after us. So I'm that one person who's been doing that, and I'll keep doing that. But I'd love your help, and I appreciate so much that the legislature is working on this. And I hear from the other testimony there's a lot of intricacies and details to work out. But thank you for working on it, and I support you on that.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here. And I'm sure if you've never done a Solve cleanup, Mr. McGowan, who is here, will make sure he has your name and number before you leave.
Well, we've several Solve things. We sponsored several Solve things ourselves in Hood River. So we're Solve supporters.
Thank you for coming all the way here today.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Dingfield, and Vice Chair, and representing. First of all, I'm so glad to be here with you. Thank you very much. My name is Edward, currently CAGRO, Korean American Girls Association of Oregon, current vice president. And also, I own one of those, my own store located in Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much. You gave me a great opportunity to testify regarding what about returning or recycling. A little while ago, Representative John Lim already mentioned most part of my testimony, so I don't have not much things, you know. But in addition to that, what you say, majority of members, I have a little bit over 300 the members' store, Poland and area. But majority, they don't have even, you know, capability, you know, make set of the storage spaces in the business. Most of them less than 1,500 square feet. Plus, like John Lee mentioned about a little while ago, there's a family system, you know, business. Mom and dad, or son and mom, you know, daughter's dad, kind of things. Only, they don't even have any one employees, unfortunately. There's a, you know, living, you know, daily, you know, daily basis. One of my suggestion is, if it, state labor, they can set up like a drop point, drop center. They, a customer, they automatically bring it there, you know, the water bottle returning in a certain area, then drop them off, you know, then crank, container recovery, the forces will come over, pick them up, you know. That way they can save their time, their, you know, their manpower, you know, their money, of course, as well as, that is my suggestion, if it's possible, you know, you can do. This is my conclusion of my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming here today, and appreciate you sharing your thoughts on Senate Bill 707.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Emery, the owner of Earth2O Bottled Water Company, located in Central Oregon. Thank you for your time today. You've got an ambitious task ahead of you, and I think somewhat challenging when you look into the details of this. When I first heard of this bill, our company has positioned ourselves and been a leader in sustainable business practices, not just in our industry, but overall, and we've invested millions to do so. And I, in our ad agency, thought this would be a great thing for us to get behind and be the cheerleaders of, until we started looking at the challenges involved in enforcing this, because it goes to market so differently than carbonated soft drinks and beer, where you have an enforcement mechanism with the distributor network. Carbonated soft drinks, predominantly Coke and Pepsi, go through franchise distribution. Beer, by law, goes through franchise distribution. And so there is an enforcer. Bottled water comes to market in varied ways. Nestle alone has over 25 different distribution mechanisms coming into the state of Oregon, brand marketed as Arrowhead here. I closed on a building the other day, and First American Title gave me a bottle of water. No producer. No idea who produces it. So if that goes in the system and it says a nickel refund, who's paying the nickel and who are they going to collect it from? It's a piece that needs to be addressed. Schools and healthcare system, hospitals, retirement homes, do need to be addressed in the system as a possible exemption if they have a closed net recycling program. The schools right now, they pay 15 cents for a bottle. We're talking a 33% increase if they're required to pay a nickel deposit, and then if the students bring it up to them, how are they going to refund that? Mm-hmm. Healthcare systems, as well as schools, the way the law is currently written, they would have to redeem any bottle of water that's sold in the marketplace, whether they sold it or not. Do we want our schools and our healthcare systems to become redemption centers? I don't think we do. It's something that needs to be addressed in the bill. I don't know if any of you have taken the time or have had the opportunity, but I have passed it out. Portland has come out with a very progressive recycling program that they're proposing. This is an early draft. I lived in Germany for a number of years, and they had a phenomenal curbside recycling program with three bins. And coincidentally enough, it's a similar program to what Portland has just introduced the other day. It's progressive. I think our bottle bill it's a symbol, it's iconic, it's historic, it's also 36 years old. And if that's the best we can do to try to repeat a system that's 36 years old rather than trying to come out with something that's holistic and progressive, shame on us. There is a recycling issue that's out there. I believe that there's better ways of doing it.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Yes. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Emery, you mentioned, if I understood, when you were talking about schools and healthcare facilities, you said you used the term, I think, closed net recycling system. Did I catch that correctly?
Yes, sir.
What does that mean?
We do private label production for healthcare facilities and schools. If we were to have the schools not charge them the nickel, have them have a approved recycling program, whether it be by DEQ or, I guess, OLCC, where they would have recycling containers on campus, we would pick it up from them when we made our deliveries to it, using that as a way of exempting from acquiring the nickel deposit or them having to pay out a nickel to any bottle that came back to them.
Follow up.
One
of the things that, you know, since my wife's involved in education, I was thinking about the free lunch program, for example, at schools. And, you know, I'm guessing that, you know, companies probably donate water bottles to schools, perhaps for free lunch programs or whatnot. But, you know, how would this bill deal with that? I mean, these kids are on free lunch. Are we going to charge them a nickel to get their bottle of water in their free lunch program? How would that system work?
That's the question that I'm posing. There's And we are included in the free lunch program that schools are using, where they get their choice of milk, juice, or bottled water. Once you open that door, and the way the bill is currently written, the schools would be charged an additional nickel, so their cost would go up by 33% for that bottle of water, and the schools would be required to redeem a nickel on any bottle of water that was they wanted to bring back Costco water because somebody's parent packed in their lunch, then they would pay out the nickel.
Representative Smith, you.
I have one last comment.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm glad, Mr. Emery, that you brought along this Portland handout, because one of the things when I met with Representative Berger early in the session, she asked me what I thought about expanding the bottle bill. I said, fine, just as long as you don't mess up the curbside recycling system that we have in place in Bend, because I can take every piece of plastic, every metal can, every shrink-wrapped plastic from Christmas gifts for kids, put it in one bin, and put it at the curb. And if I have to change that and get in my car and drive to the store to put these things in a machine that don't work all the time, I said, I'm not going to be happy. And so one of the things that I haven't really asked yet, but as these hearings progress, I'd be curious how this bill may affect the curbside recycling program that we have in place. Because I've also talked to the Vice President of Bend Garbage and Recycling, and they have invested a lot of money into setting up their recycling stream to the point where it's almost making them some money. But my concern is if we start taking this volume out of his recycling stream, he's going to lose money. So that's really kind of an open question here as we go through this. One of the things I'm going to be looking for an answer to as we have these hearings.
Okay, thank you, Representative Burley. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, ma'am, for coming all the way from Hood River, and thank you for on your daily walks picking up trash. I'm an Eagle Scout, and we've always been taught you always leave your campsite a little cleaner than you found it, and I teach that to my boys, and so thank you. We heard testimony a little earlier today from the representative from Fred Myers who said the cost of disposal may be so great that there might be folks out there that just choose to dump the plastic that they collect. And she was just being a voice of reality. What would you think if we took the bottle refund and took it from a nickel to a dime and allowed our grocers an opportunity to be compensated for the work they're doing?
Not being a grocer.
Right.
As a citizen, well, I would gladly do it because it catches up with us one way or another. You know, I live on that Highway 84, so all of Portland's and most of Seattle's trash goes down that highway, so, or out on barges, you know, one way or the other. So I would gladly do it because we're going to pay for it as citizens one way or the other.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Manager. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much for your testimony. Okay, next I'm going to call up Ryan Roeder, Marge Eastley, and Jack McGowan. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming today. Why don't you get started, Jack? And everyone's doing very well at 3 minutes, so we're just so you thought we were slacking here.
Until
we've got
me,
our
right.
little. No reflection on you, Jeff.
Chair Dingfelder, fellow representatives, thank you so much for having us today. And really listening to what I've heard is very good testimony, reasoned testimony. And I think what I've heard throughout the day is some type of testimony that is saying, can we converge? Can we find some kind of middle ground here that we can work on? So I want to commend the committee for this. By way of introduction, my name is Jack McGowan. I'm the executive director of Oregon's largest volunteer nonprofit, SOLVE. SOLVE was formed in 1969 by Governor Tom McCall. Really, we are the child of the first bottle bill. So I've been director for 17 years, and this is a personal interest to me, not only as an Oregonian, but also as director of this organization that really has to deal with this problem on a day-to-day basis. If I may, I would just like to give you a little bit of background about SOLV. When Governor McCall formed SOLV in 1969, it was really going to be the service agency for the state of Oregon, of linking business, government, and citizens in a threefold effort to preserve the livability of Oregon through volunteer action. SOLV now engages over 90,000 volunteer engagements annually in over 250 communities. I guess we're best known for the beach cleanup, since SOLV started the world's first beach cleanup with state agencies, both Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. We have seen a dramatic increase in the amount of illegal dumping all across the entire state of Oregon. And I want to address that today. In the most recent beach cleanup, which occurred under horrific weather conditions, driving rainstorm, we still had over 5,000 people come out and magically clean the entire coastline of Oregon. But what we found with this year's beach cleanup was truly horrifying. 108,000 pounds of debris was cleaned up. And if you saw the amount of debris, the single item that was there more than any other item were water bottles. Not by the hundreds, literally by the thousands. There was 1 mile stretch down in the central coast of Oregon, where in 1 mile, over 2,000 bottles were found. What is going on here? It is washing in from our rivers and our lakes. It's being deposited carelessly on roadsides, as one of our residents from Hood River testified. And I think what we need to do, folks, is really look at this. I have a photograph that hangs in my office. It's a rather large photograph, and it's Governor Tom McCall and then Secretary of State that was there at the time. And what was amazing to me was Tom and the Secretary of State both introducing the first bottle bill. And I think what we need to do here with Tom McCall and Clay Myers and their history is to really look at this. I think personally, and Representative Smith, you asked us to give our personal feelings about this. I think the time has high approached and really has passed that we need to increase the bottle bill. 5%, 5 cents has no meaning these days. In 1970, 5 cents had a lot of meaning. And so what I would really say is to work with the distributors, to work with the retail industry, find some type of commonality where there is a win-win situation. Because the people of Oregon, the environment of Oregon, is really going to be the true winners. And if you aren't talking about increasing the bottle bill rate, I would suggest raising it a tiny bit more, maybe 1 more cent. Where you need some type of administrative funding source to help the bottle bill not only to succeed, but to really talk about the pollution, the litter that is plaguing the state. Whether it be bottles, whether it be illegal dump sites that are plaguing all of our natural areas, something has to be done by the state of Oregon to lead the citizens in this newfound way of citizenship participation and volunteerism. With that, I thank you very much. I would love to have direct any questions that you might have, and hopefully that I can add something. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, and particularly Representative Cannon, who represents my residents. I am Brian Roeder. I'm the co-founder and the CEO of New Seasons Market. Our 1,500 staff members operate 8 grocery stores in Portland, Hillsboro, Beaverton, and Lake Oswego. Our stores range in size from 15,000 square feet to 40,000 square feet. As you know, there has been lots of publicity about how Oregon grocers are unified in their opposition to the current bottle bill and to any type of expansion of the bill that includes more recycling occurring at grocery stores. I'm here today to tell you that simply is not true. New Seasons Market strongly supports the expansion and modernization of Oregon's bottle bill. Oregon's current law is 35 years old, and while it was groundbreaking in 1971, it desperately needs to be updated. First, the nickel deposit isn't as much of a motivation to return bottles as it used to be, but even more importantly, the existing law doesn't include most plastic bottles. As a result, a large number of plastic juice bottles, tea bottles, and water bottles just get tossed. According to the State's Department of Environmental Quality, Oregonians threw away about 125 million water bottles in 2005. That's just plain crazy and a waste of a valuable resource. Having the bottles and cans returned to grocery stores is not our preferred scenario. Dealing with bottle refunds is a bit of a logistical nightmare for us. Someone has to take them back from the customers. Then we have to assign a staff member at each store to sort the returns.
although this does provide employment opportunities for some of the developmentally challenged members of our community. We also have to find a place to keep the empties until the distributor comes to pick them up, which means that at any given moment, at each store, we may have up to 30 huge plastic bags piled in the storage area. Even so, our daily experience with these issues proves to us that the argument that accepting returns is virtually impossible or somehow creates a new food safety exposure is not accurate. If a viable solution other than returning deposit bottles and cans to grocery stores is developed and successfully implemented, we would happily support it. We would like to see a system where manufacturers accept greater responsibility. If a redemption program is designed in such a way that our neighbors actually use it, we'll be thrilled. But it's irresponsible to keep waiting for that day to come and to do nothing to help fix the problem that we have in the meantime. We need to take action now, and we think that when you consider the current alternatives, the choice is clear. Collecting returnable bottles and cans is definitely a hassle for us, but since we sell the drinks in the first place, it sure seems like we have the greatest responsibility to make sure the bottles don't end up in our landfills. As former Governor Tom McCall might have said, it's time to stand up for the quality of life we all know and expect in Oregon and to fight this shameless threat to our environment. Thank you.
Thank you. Forever.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I'm with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I come here today, I think most of you are familiar with the League of Women Voters, but one of our missions is to support the common good, and I feel that this bill, while not perfect, does support the common good and what is best for Oregonians. We have long supported recycling efforts on a national level and at the state level in Oregon, and we feel that the addition of water bottles is a huge benefit, and but we support any efforts that are going to increase the number and types of beverage containers that are included. We would love to see sports and fruit drinks included because we feel that just including water bottles and not the other bottles seems a little inconsistent and arbitrary. We'd also like to see an increase in the deposit amount, given that there's been no increase since 1972, and 5 cents just is not the incentive that it used to be. We do understand that grocers currently play a vital role in the success of this recycling effort, and we feel that there should be some compensation for grocers. We feel that they are a vital link in this chain, and that so far, if it is an enormous burden on them, that in some way we need to ease that burden. We do support the creation of the Bottle Bill Task Force because we recognize that this is a complex issue that requires the input and support of all concerned. And we encourage whoever participates in the task force that they will put aside narrow interests and really look at what is best for Oregonians, which is the waste reduction and resource conservation efforts that we so hope will happen. Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you all for your testimony, and particularly Mr. Roeder. I appreciate your commitment to making the bottle bill work and also your commitment to making your company work. Just a quick story. A family member was in a New Seasons recently and saw you bagging groceries. They're the CEO of the company bagging groceries. I think it says something about your commitment to that organization. We have testimony from a grocer who says that if we vote yes on expanding the bottle bill, you are voting yes to increase the E. coli, listeria, and coliforms into a food manufacturing facility. I certainly don't want to do that. I mean, it would give me real pause to vote on increasing or decreasing food safety. What's your response to that?
I think that we've already developed systems that allow us to segregate that type of problem from the food that we sell, and it seems to me that my colleagues in the room have been very successful at doing that also in their companies. There's all sorts of bacteria that gets brought into grocery stores for all sorts of reasons, and on people's feet, on the shopping bags that they bring back to reuse, on the pants that are on their little children, and so I don't see this as a big distinction. And plus, we already have a system in place that does it.
Okay. Other questions? Other questions, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just more of a comment. Brian, first of all, you need to know that you're very well served by Representative Cannon and the job he does for you. And then, Madam Chair, I just want to let you know, after hearing Ms. Noel's comments, it's my intention to put together an amendment to this bill that would find a compromise and an incentive for the consumer to increase their participation in the bottle bill, while at the same time working with the local grocers to create a financial reward for them for the hard work they do. I think there's a win-win to be had up there. So I just want to let you know that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, Mr. Ritter, I have a question for you. I wanted to, and it wasn't clear from your testimony, what do you currently do with your containers now in your store? Are you a member of Crank?
We are a member of Crank. I thought it was interesting. We have a different perspective than what our colleague at Fred Meyer had to say, because we actually do not have the bottle machines. We have staff that accept the bottle returns from the customers. We actually think that the costs are greater doing that than having the bottle machines. We do it by hand for a couple of reasons. One, because our neighborhood associations have asked us to try and keep that activity from outside the parking lot, because generally it smells bad and creates noise, and also because it's just a customer service issue for us and for our customers. As many people have testified, the machines are broken regularly, and so we don't want to put our customers through that, so we actually have people who can just take them back.
And as a follow-up to that, so then you track manually, or you have a computer system or data entry, because the Representative Burley asked how that's tracked. It's tracked through the bar code scanning of the reverse vending machines.
We count them. I mean, one of the other things that we do that helps, and I know that there's cost issues that everyone's facing, but we have a program where our customers can come back, and we have a separate place where they can just dump the returnable containers to donate them to the schools. And over the last number of years since we started the program, over 1.6 million containers have been donated to the schools, which has resulted in an $80,000 contribution to the schools in Portland, Hillsboro, Lake Oswego, and Beaverton, and it eliminates us from having to have that interaction with the customer, and saves us labor, and also helps out our school systems who are so desperately in need of the money. So we think that there's creative ways that some of the cost issues can be addressed.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming in to testify today.
Thank you.
Next we have, I think our last folks from away, is Kevin Dietley. And then I will start calling up just from the top of the list and going down the list. So Joe Gilliam and Dick Cole. State your name, please, and you've got 3 minutes each.
Thanks.
It doesn't include questions, just so if you wonder.
Thanks, Chairman Dingfelder, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Deet. I'm a partner at Northbridge Environmental Consultants in Westford, Massachusetts. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate your accelerating my presence. I think I qualify for the 100-mile rule today. I want to share with you some research perspectives that we have on the deposit law. My firm has studied deposit laws in all 11 states in the U.S. as well as in other countries around the world. I would like to bring some specifics to some of the discussions we've had about costs and about environmental impact, and I'd like to relay to you some of the experience that we've had with how a system like this has worked in Maine, which is really the only other state that has a comparable system to Oregon's where there's an expansion to bottled water. First, let me talk about cost. We have looked at the cost of the current bottle bill in Oregon and in Maine, and we feel that the operating cost of expanding Oregon's bottle bill to include bottled water would be about $12 million a year. That's $12 million a year in hard dollar costs for new equipment, new staff, new reverse vending machines, contracts and fees paid to people to pick up empty containers. That's what it will cost every year to make this Senate Bill 707 work. On a per container basis, that works out to about 6-cent price increase on the average bottle of water purchased in Oregon. If you add the 5-cent deposit to that, that makes an 11-cent price increase at retail, about a 66% price increase on the current average price of water in the state. So what do you get for that money? What will happen in Oregon and what will happen to Oregon's bottle bill is something that we need to discuss in some detail. I can't do it in 3 minutes. You've already started to explore it in some of the earlier comments, but let me make a couple basic observations. Oregon's bottle bill will not function as it does today if the law is expanded to include bottled water. All the other products that are covered by the law today are sold by exclusive distributors, companies who have legal franchise rights to protect them as being the only person who sells their product, and therefore being the only person who picks that product up at the end of the day when it's returned. One company, one deposit, one return responsibility. Bottled water is sold through dozens of distributorships. When a container shows up at a store, the ability to assign responsibility for refunding that nickel and picking up that container to a single distributor does not exist. The only ability that you have is to link that to a manufacturer who is out of state, doesn't have a presence in the state, and probably doesn't have the nickel in his pocket in order to refund it. That creates problems. What that has created in Maine is a fairly complicated patchwork system of contract companies that service various parts of the states and various overlapping distributorships, driving trucks to every single redemption center, retailer, fast food outlet, and everything around the state that takes back empties, picking up the brands of the companies that have signed up with them for rather significant fees. That's why it costs $12 million a year, because you pay a lot more to have these containers picked up than you pay to have beer and soft drink containers picked up. And I'd be happy to elaborate on how that system works in Maine in the questions. The last thing I want to say in my remarks is to talk about the environmental benefits of SB 707. For $12 million and for disruption to the redemption system, what do you get? Well, on the litter side, granted, there are a lot of water bottles that appear in beach cleanups. There are a lot of water bottles in the waste stream. Unfortunately, tackling the water bottle problem as a solution to the litter problem is not a holistic solution. It's not going to have a meaningful impact on litter that's mismanaged in Oregon. If you look at national research that's out there across 17 states, non-carbonated beverage containers of all types average about 1.3% of all the litter that's out there. Water bottles are a fraction of that. So if every single water bottle is eliminated from the litter stream in Oregon as a result of Senate Bill 707, 99% of the problem is still there. That's not a solution, especially not for $12 million a year. On the recycling side, the impacts are even more de minimis. If you look at the number of plastic containers that are out there, their presence in the waste stream, the current recycling, the incremental recycling that would result from Senate Bill 707 is 0.03%. That is, Oregon's waste diversion rate would go up from 35.34% to 45.37%. In other words, virtually no impact on the state's recycling rate. There's no question that the issues before the committee to focus on beverage container litter and mismanagement are critical. From our perspective, from the perspective of other states around the country and other alternatives that there are that are available, this is a very inefficient and ineffective way of going about addressing those problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Chair members, my name is Dick Cole. I'm the store director at Bales Farmington on Analoa, Oregon. And I would like to focus a little bit on how we have worked with the bottle bill for many years and supported it 100%. We are looking as a company what the effect to us is going to be and to our customers. We are in a situation that if we increase 50% on the containers, that we're going to have to probably purchase four more machines at about $55,000, which we can't afford at this point. If we were to go back to the old system in 1970 when we were counting bottles again, it would probably cost us about $85,000 just for our three stores to count those bottles. The main concern we have is redeeming the water bottles, because there are so many water bottles out there that it's difficult to recognize where they were coming from and how we redeem our money back on that those packages. That's difficult and would be very hard for, I think, all companies involved. Crink has a nice system set up as it is right now, but I think it would be a large undertaking to get all water bottle companies and other companies that are affected by this bill to participate in it. Right now, about 50% of our customers purchase groceries after they have done their bottles. And I do support having a
increase so we can cover a little bit of cost, but we're still concerned with the amount of containers that we're going to get to bring in at this point and be able to handle it with our labor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gillian. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Northwest Grocery Association, and most of the retailers who make this work. The bill has several critical impacts. I'm going to go through them real quickly here and hopefully give you some other ideas here. Section 1, you've heard about. Flavored water just won't work. The practical application of that will be that we just won't charge a deposit, and we won't give back a deposit on anything but bottled water. We don't know what flavored water is. We don't know how someone else determines what flavored water is. We don't know if there's a nickel paid. We don't know if we should pay it back. So we're just going to have to ignore that part of the law until someone says, we have a definition of flavored water. So that is a critical piece you better clean up in the bill if you want it to work. Otherwise, there's going to be mass confusion amongst the consumers. I thought I paid a nickel. Why don't I get my nickel back? It's just not going to work, plain and simple. Section 2 is a mechanical meltdown of the bottle bill. It is where the author of the bill got off track a little bit and went beyond adding water bottles and changing the entire system. By asking the retailers to collect every brand, whether they sell it or not, is a wholesale change of the bottle bill. The only reason the bottle bill works today is there are two protections in the law. Retailers only redeem what they sell. Wholesalers only redeem what they sell. Half that equation was taken out. The wholesale part was left in. So we're going to take everything in, and the wholesalers are only going to pick up what they sell. So we're going to have a huge bottleneck. I hated to use that, but I had to. In the stores, because they're going to be a place to go. So you really have two choices in Section 2 if you want the expansion to work. Restore the language back, so we take back what we sell, and so do the distributors. Or we'll take back everything, and the distributors have to take back everything. But the way it's built today is it's a mechanism to get folks to join Crank or other organizations and pay fees. It's kind of a little moneymaker on the side here. We can't handle it. And as you squeeze, for the small stores, you heard going to 50 containers a day, they currently have 144. They're going to take in just about one-third of what they have to take in. All those containers are going to be squeezed into the main supermarkets, and they have to be redeemed. So you see a compression in the bill, and we're going to be stuck with these containers, and a lot of stuff's going to go into the waste stream. The only way to make this work, if you have an open-loop distributor, and that's what water is, instead of being closed-loop, being the franchise system, is to have your nickels go to a central spot, a central fund someplace. So we aren't chasing the distributors. There may be 25 distributors who distribute Arrowhead, and we go back and say, well, we have 1,000 Arrowhead bottles. Who pays me? And they all... not ours. It must have came through his shop. We need a one-stop shop for nickels. So all the retailers send them into a central fund, and they can get credit from a central fund, so we know where the nickels are. Then you're not going to have a compliance issue of chasing these wholesalers. The last thing I would say is on the litter issue. Mr. Dietley's comments are dead on. This is a $12 million bill right here to Oregon consumers. A grocery bill is going to go up $12 million on the passage of 707. The state of Washington, which did not pass a bottle bill in 1971, they opted for a litter tax. That's .0001 across the board on almost every consumer item in the state. They address 100% of the litter stream on $17 million a year. They clean up their parks, their highways, their beaches for $17 million. Everything, tires, cigarette butts, cups, straws, lids, plastic bags, diapers, mattresses, you name it, they get it all for $17 million. We're gonna spend $12 million to get 1% of the stream.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Burley, Representative Smith, and then I have a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kevin, I didn't pick up in your testimony about other states. Do other states, Maine, for example, the one you were talking about, currently... include the water bottles?
Yes, the only states that include water in their deposit systems are Maine, California, and Hawaii. California and Hawaii both have very different styles of redemption systems. Their laws are structured differently. There's not a retail-based system. There's not a distributor-based pickup system. It's an independent redemption and return network that is funded independently. So Maine is really the only relevant example of a system that has a distributor retail-based redemption and includes water.
So Maine has a system that's comparable to what 707 would set up.
Yes.
But I didn't quite follow California and Hawaii. How do they do it?
California has a... well, how much time do we have? Not nearly enough.
No, probably not enough.
California's law is about 130 pages long. The regs are longer than that.
Well, but that's fundamentally, California for you.
What fundamentally happens in California is all of the products that are sold that are subject to deposit, the deposits are all remitted to the state. They all sit in a pot at the state. And a completely separate network of redemption centers is used by which people return their containers. It is a pure redemption center system in California. People, therefore, are almost exclusively making special trips to return their containers for refund. The consequence of that system is that it is the poorest performing redemption system in the country. They have about a 51% redemption rate in California. They get it up over 60% because they count the containers that come back through their curbside program in the total as well. But fundamentally, California's system drives people to separate centers to return their containers, and what that results in is a very low redemption rate, a very high amount of unclaimed deposits sitting in that state fund that they can't figure out what to do with because nobody's coming back to get their containers. So that's how California works. They also have about 250 employees and about a $35 million a year administrative cost to sit around and figure out what to do with all those unclaimed deposits that they have. Hawaii's system is a little bit newer, is a little bit simpler than California's, but it is still fundamentally separate in that it has a separate redemption system, a separate set of recyclers that pick up the containers on the return side, so retailers are not involved in returns. It's still a little unclear how the Hawaii system is working. They're still having problems with people redeeming the same containers more than once. They haven't worked the bugs yet out of the Hawaii system. Only Maine has the system where distributors, third-party agents, and retailers have had to come to grips with the logistics of handling a non-exclusively distributed product like water. That's really the only state where that has happened.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Deatley, welcome to the Capitol.
Thank you.
We were given earlier some handouts, and it's attachment 2, and it shows the loop, if you will, for the existing Oregon bottle bill. And I guess I can see the loop on how that works for pop and for beer. I guess I need a little 101 here based on your interpretation of this bill. Take us through, if you would, so I can understand the step-by-step on how the bottle bill would be handled, water bottles would be handled under this bill, and then help me track the nickels.
There's an exhibit on the fourth page of my testimony that may help with that, which, of course, I'm sitting on holding in my hand.
Oh, okay.
So, a possible way that you could be looking at it. Apologize for that. In any event, let me start with the sale of the product. And I'll use an example of beer to contrast it. If you're in a store and there's a beer can there and it's a Budweiser beer can, you know where that Budweiser beer can came from. It came from the Anheuser-Busch distributor who has that territory, wholesaler who has that territory, which is protected legally to be only his territory. If at the same time that same store is also selling a bottle of Arrowhead water, there is really no telling how that Arrowhead water came to him. And in fact, if you're on street corner and there's a Fred Meyer and an Albertsons and a 7-Eleven and a gas station Quickie Mart, four different distributors could have brought the same half-liter Arrowhead bottle into those four stores. Now, what's going to happen is the distributors of those products are going to charge a nickel when they deliver that product to the store. So those distributors, some number of distributors, let's say dozens of distributors, are going to be sitting on nickels for Arrowhead bottles of water. Now, a consumer brings that bottle back to one of the stores, probably to the Fred Meyer or to the Albertsons, because that's where most people bring their returns. What happens to that container? Well, it gets processed through the reverse vending machine. It's fine and dandy. It gets read as a half-liter Arrowhead bottle. But who was the distributor? And when it passes through a warehouse, it doesn't get some sort of imprint on it as to who the distributor of that product was. The only way to track that bottle back to someone else is based on the fact that it's Arrowhead, and it's Nestle Waters of North America. So you call Greenwich, Connecticut, and you say Nestle Waters of North America, you've got a whole bunch of containers here that you are responsible for. You need to have these picked up. You owe us a nickel, and you need to get them out of our stores. Now, that's what happened in Maine. I'm not speculating. I
just want to interrupt real quick. Under this current bill, that's exactly how this would happen.
Yes. That's who's responsible for collecting deposits. That's who's responsible for remitting deposits. What the bill says is that the importer, distributor, or manufacturer would pay the refund. My point is that there is no distributor for that bottle in reality, because you cannot look at that bottle and determine who the distributor is. Unlike beer and soda, where you can look at that bottle and know by federal law whose franchise this is, whose protected franchise is this, it's theirs. You don't know that for water. You don't know it for juice. You don't know it for iced tea. There's a lot of products that you don't know it for. Soft drinks and beer are the only products that are sold commonly in the grocery store that are exclusively protected, have exclusively protected franchise territories. This a bottle of water, a bottle of Ocean Spray cranberry juice is no different than a box of cornflakes. It can be purchased any number of ways and brought into the state any number of ways. So there, the magic of the current bottle bill, if you will, the closed loop system, the reason that the bottle bill works as it does today is because of that exclusive distributor relationship that exists between beer wholesalers, soft drink bottlers, retailers, and consumers. All it is a manifestation of the old refillable system. It's the current manifestation of the old take back the empty glass bottle system where they were refillable. That isn't what we have today with those other products. So we have a disconnect between the company that charges the deposit, the distributor, and a manufacturer, a remote manufacturer without a presence in the state, who needs to take responsibility for picking up those containers and refunding the nickels. So they pay fees to third parties. There's a half a dozen or more third parties in Maine, plus a bunch of contract folks who do the kind of really rural parts of the state, Billy Bob's trucking. It's pretty informal. But the fees are pretty healthy, 3 to 4 cents on average for pickup charges for a container in addition to the nickel refund. In most cases, a lot of companies, especially juice and water companies, end up paying out many more nickels than they collect. Nestle Waters, which is the manufacturer of Arrowhead, last year paid out 108% more nickels in Maine than they collected. So they paid out $836,000 more nickels than they brought in because of over-redemption or under-collection of deposits in the first place. So they're paying the 3 cents, say, of a pickup charge to Billy Bob's Trucking. They pay 5 cent refund value, and in Maine they pay a 3.5 cent handling fee to the retailer or redemption center. So they're out 11, 12 cents per unit on every single water bottle that comes back in Maine. If they didn't collect the deposit, that's all right out of their pockets.
Okay, I have one question for you, and then we're going to go on to the next panel. And I worked, in full disclosure, as a policy analyst for the state of Maine when the bottle bill was expanded.
Were you in the policy office?
I was in the policy office.
With Hartley Pulaski?
Maine Waste Management Agency, and worked right across the divider from Hartley.
Yeah.
I might have heard him talking to you on the phone. Who knows?
Very possible.
So I am very familiar with Maine, and although I left in 1992, and you know, when I left, the whole system just fell. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway,
coming together.
I'm very familiar with Maine's bottle bill, and the I worked very closely on the unclaimed bottle deposit issue in the sheet. So if you could sort of review what is happening to the sheet in Maine now, and what other states are doing with it. Obviously, here in Oregon, it was not in the original law. When I came here, I sort of said, what do you do with the sheet? And I was like, oh, we don't know. So anyway, I think that would be helpful for the committee to understand that issue, since it's something that you mentioned in your testimony.
Okay, sure. Right now in the U.S., there are 11 deposit states. Two, California and Hawaii, have these kind of wacky state-run systems where the deposits all go to the state on everything that's sold, and then the state is responsible for paying out the refunds, whether it's 100% or whatever. So all deposits are turned over to the state in California and Hawaii. So we really have the other nine that are what I call the traditional bottle bills, like Oregon. In those nine states, Michigan and Massachusetts and Maine are the only three in which the state actually takes control of some or all of the unclaimed deposits. In Michigan, all unclaimed deposits are turned over to the state every quarter. In Michigan, because the deposit is 10 cents, the redemption rate is very high in Michigan. There are a lot of containers that are redeemed in Michigan that weren't purchased in Michigan for 10 cents. It wasn't just Kramer and Seinfeld that got the idea you could bring for 10 cents and make some money. A whole lot of other people in surrounding states have figured that out, too. So a lot of containers that come back in Michigan come from other places. There isn't very much unclaimed deposit money left in Michigan, given the 10-cent deposit, but the state does collect it. In Massachusetts, the state also collects the unclaimed deposit money every quarter. I think that's currently up to about $35 million a year in Massachusetts, and has been rising as people's interest in the deposit law has been sinking in Massachusetts. More of the containers are showing up in curbside bins and less in the stores.
And they're still at a nickel, correct?
They are still at a nickel. In Maine, Maine is the most interesting because Maine did two things. When it expanded its law in 1989 to include all non-carbonated beverages plus wine and liquor, Maine also decided it was time to take half of the unclaimed deposits for the state to turn over to the state planning office for its budget, which
that was us.
May have paid yourself. unfortunately, with people learning how the unclaimed deposits work, and especially how expansion worked in Maine, a couple things started happening. Companies, as I described to Representative Smith, started not collecting enough deposits and being asked to pay out many more refunds because of the disconnect between the manufacturer and the distributor. So there were companies who were paying out, who were experiencing well over 100% redemption rates in the state, 150, 200, 250% redemption rates in the state. The state of Maine itself, through the Liquor Commission, was finding itself increasingly squeezed on the return rate for its liquor bottles because the redemption rate was creeping up near 100%. So instead of the state having a lot of unclaimed deposit money left over, the fraud from the expanded system was starting to eat into the unclaimed deposits. So in 1995, finally, the legislature actually ended the escheat of the unclaimed in Maine, said we're not going to take the risk for paying out excess refunds anymore, because companies were coming to the state and saying, hey, you know, we sold 100,000 containers and collected the nickels. We're being asked to redeem 150,000. You're sitting on the pot of nickels from everybody else, so can we have a rebate, a refund? So Maine terminated its escheat in 1995. A couple years ago, Maine modified its law again to establish kind of a two-tier system in which companies who participate in a certain kind of collection network, an integrated collection work, somewhat like the Crink system in the Portland and Salem areas, had a lower handling fee and were able to retain the unclaimed deposits, the ones that do not. Turn the unclaimed deposits over to the state. So Maine has a bifurcated system, if you will, where a certain fraction of distributors retain the unclaimed deposits and a certain fraction turn them over to the state. The remaining states, Iowa, Vermont, the others, the distributors retain the unclaimed deposits.
And do we have data on how much that is for the other states? I think you mentioned
sure.
in Massachusetts.
Let me think. Oregon.
Or that's something you provide to us.
Vermont, the unclaimed deposits are around $2 million a year. In Massachusetts, I think I said the unclaimed deposits are around $35, $36 million a year. In New York State, the unclaimed deposits are around $90 million a year. New York's a big state. Mm-hmm. And again, the bottle bill isn't real popular, especially in the city where nobody wants to store bottles that roaches and rats live off of. So people don't return containers a lot in the city. So there's a lot of unclaimed deposits down there. Those are the only states where those numbers are published officially. I don't know what the numbers are in Iowa and in Oregon. DEQ's figures of approximately $15 million of unclaimed, I believe are overstated. DEQ's methodology is good because it knows what was put in the landfills and it knows what was sold, but DEQ's methodology does not account for the containers that come down I-5 from Vancouver or from any other outside state. There's a significant amount of fraud in Oregon as there are in other states. Based on the distributor data that we've seen, I believe the return rate in Oregon is probably closer to about 90%. So the difference between the 78% that Mr. Danko cited and the 90% that I believe is actually what's paid out is about what the fraud is in Oregon. So I would guess that the unclaimed in Oregon is probably closer to $7 or $8 million.
All right, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming all the way from Massachusetts, almost Maine.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to call up one last panel, and then we will have two more hours of testimony on Friday. So I know there's some folks who are not able to return. Rick Winderhalter, is that right? Is there anybody else who can't come back on Friday to testify? Betty, you want to come up? Betty Patton. And, excuse me? Okay. And I think it's Rob. And you can't come back either. Okay, we'll make sure and get you. Are you, you're on the sign-up sheet? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for having us today. My name is Rick Winterhalter. I'm with the Association of Oregon Recyclers, and the association is a trade association of most of the folks, local governments, nonprofit agencies, and all the businesses in the state providing recycling services. And I think it's it was pointed out here. There are many things pointed out today that I'm not going to repeat what was said. Mr. Danko's comments about some of the definitional issues that we'll probably need to address before this goes a little too much further. But I think it's important to remember that the original bill was, as described, it was kind of a product stewardship bill, and that closed distribution system has made it work very well. And it's also very important to note that we don't have 100 pages of law. We gave the businesses in Oregon a direction that said, you know, we don't like this no deposit, no return. It's kind of making us burn a little bit as Oregonians, and we're not very happy about seeing them being littered twice as much as other containers on the road. And so we'd like to kind of institute a little system. Here's some guidance. Go forth, businesses, and make it happen. And they've been very successful in this state. Now, as been pointed out, and I think a couple of the surveys that we've done recently, you know, Oregonians have told us that, yes, we believe the bottle bill does make the state cleaner. And, yes, we believe we'd like to see an expansion of those bottles collected at the store. So there's clearly that the consumers in the state, the Oregonians, believe that, you know what, we're willing to participate in this activity by their saying that we want to increase those containers. Now, that being said, there's a lot of devil in the details, and we've realized that, the association realizes that, and you've heard a lot of those details today, and that's why we think it's very important that it's important to say that 707 is really an honest attempt to bring the public a new bottle bill. But as I say, devil's in the details, and that's why the task of force is very important component of this bill. And AOR wants to ensure that it has that the task force has a very strong direction, and the legislature will accept come 2009. Because it's important to remember that all these things have been talked about a little bit today don't come into effect until 2009. Given the task force fails in their efforts. So we would like to see that task force have about 9 members of subject matter experts, and that they report to an interim legislative committee that it has a strong chair, and we would appoint it either by the legislature or the governor, and we would strongly suggest that it be professionally mediated. AOR made an attempt to do some things a few years back, and I just think it just would really facilitate the efforts of the task force in that regard. I think that task force needs to look at continuing to follow the product stewardship model of the current bill, and that may be looking at all the concerns that have been brought up today about, and I think it's important when Mr. Gilliam says let's make sure we put those monies in one pot and watch the pot, kind of the Andrew Carnegie deal, put all your eggs in one basket and watch the basket. So let's have the manufacturers step it back to the manufacturers so that we can have a product stewardship bill that says, you know, all the nickels are going to originate at the manufacturer. There's a lot of details in that, but it can be done, and it's an important thing to talk with at the task force. Let's review the refund value. Should that go up to a nickel, or go up to a dime, or stay a nickel, given you know, the concerns and the growing of sheet. Let's make sure we have a recycling rate. Let's make sure that the operations of the collection are sustainable. Let's do what we can to limit the fraud that's discussed here. But I think, as we can see, the sheet, at least by some examples, possibly is covering some of that fraud issue. And we need to address that and possibly continue to do that. But let's, if there's going to be a use of the sheet, let's look at how we're going to use it for public goods and how that's going to work. Covering
Rick,
the
program.
You're
out of time, so I need okay. to wrap up.
I will wrap up then. Let's look a little bit more at expanding the beverages covered. Let's continue that the consumers are equally and well served, and let's make sure that this thing is accountable and transparent to the legislature. And so let's just leave it at that right there. Thank you.
Thank you. Teddy?
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, Representative Cannon, and the rest of the committee. I am lucky enough also to be very well represented by Mr. Cannon. My name is Betty Patton, and I am president of Recycling Advocates. It's a local grassroots nonprofit in the Portland metro region that's about 20 years old, and it does exactly what its title implies. It advocates recycling. And this 20-year-old organization has grown up with recycling, and we have now pursued sustainability through waste reduction, reuse, and recycling. I have submitted written testimony, so I'll hit the highlights as quickly as possible here. The opportunity to address a modernized bottle bill really gets us at our roots, at our initial creation. We have 5 points that we would like to make of what we would like to have in a bigger, better bottle bill. And if you take my list that I've submitted and just turn it upside down, then maybe the priorities will be clearer. If you start with number five is the idea of producer responsibility is a model that we should be moving toward for products in general. Producer responsibility is something that is already being fleshed out with the electronics recycling, and it is that concept that I think needs to be really incorporated into a thoroughly modernized bottle bill. The other 4 points are that a bottle bill should cover all beverages in any container type. Bottle bill numbers, like we've seen, are obvious. High redemption and recycling rate for those covered, lower for those not. We have no vision towards what will be sold, what will be on the market in the way of product or container in the future if the legislation is written such that it covers general concepts. Then my second point is addressed so that you will be doing future legislators a favor by not having to revisit it every 36 years for modernization.
I hope that I won't be here in 36 years.
Exactly. The third point that I'd like to make is that our deposit should be increased, as is noted in situations and by testifying before, the nickel just ain't what it used to be, and it's not as much of a financial motivator for grabbing litter, for not making litter in the first place. The fourth point and final point that I'd like to make is that the ease of convenience for consumers needs to be maintained, whether that be through close-knit neighborhood redemption centers or creating a process whereby we can compensate grocers, keeping it as neighborhood compact as possible and convenient for our consumers. And with that bit, I'd like to thank you all very much for your attention, and I wish you the best and the most knowledgeable process forward in this. Thank you, Betty. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Dingfelder, members of the committee, I'm Rob Guttridge. I'm immediate past president of Recycling Advocates, a volunteer here. I'm taking my vacation day to come down and join you because I hope that you will move this bill forward and that it will become a real advancement in our bottle bill. I've been around a while. I was a high school kid picking up bottles when it was passed, and I was glad to see some fewer bottles that were no longer, that were going to be no deposit, no return. I think you, Representative Burley, I know your friend at Bend Garbage and Disposal. I helped his parents start out the curbside program in Bend, and I'm glad it's still doing well. And I want to first address your issue. I think this bottle bill expansion will not hurt curbside recycling. It's not about the containers that we have at home where we unload our groceries and where we take out our garbage. It is about the containers that we have as we move about in our lives, as we go down the road or through the park or about our daily business, drinking from a single serving container. And we are not home with our curbside recycling program when we have that. And when we are out there, there's usually just two options for us to think about. You know, do I drop this in the trash or do I not drop it in the trash? And if I don't drop it in the trash, do I just toss it out the window? Well, I work with kids now trying to talk about how to treat our world, and they're very conscious about litter and how litter works. And they see the stuff that ends up on the road, and they wonder why on earth their parents throw all that stuff away. Well, the bottle bill has been one of the tools that's helped us.
Sure, certainly. Thanks for interrupting. I wanted to touch on comment on your remarks.
Certainly.
Representative Berger and I have had some very, very good discussions about this, and she has made those same arguments that it's not what you buy and consume at home. Okay. Although I argue that as I drive back and forth to Bend every Friday night and Sunday evening coming back over here, the back seat of my little Honda CRV just gets piled up deeper and deeper with water bottles that I end up putting in the red plastic thing when I get home. And furthermore, you know, I think that we
as Oregonians, I saw you revealing that one, and I really
appreciate it.
We're
very cognizant of recycling in this state, and I'm not necessarily convinced we need to be charging ourselves a nickel or a dime to do it. But a good example is at the end of this hearing, I'm going to walk out this door, and I'm going to have an empty water bottle, and what do I see? A trash can. Mm-hmm. I don't see a box to recycle this plastic bottle in. And so I think there's a lot of things that we can do. You know, there's no place right here. There's a trash can, but nothing to put the plastic bottle in. So there's things we can do to enhance this right now. And it gets right at your comments. So.
Yeah. And I agree entirely. There are things we could do with collection containers and making it able to recycle in more places than our homes. But for us to be willing to do that and to think, make the first step that, oh, this isn't just trash that I should drop in a container, that deposit has really played a key role in educating Oregonians that these materials that we're drinking our beverages from do have material value in themselves, and recycling them will make a difference.
Thank you.
I think it's key.
We are out of time. Okay. I want to make sure that we give Steve a minute here because we're about to be kicked out of this room. Another committee is coming in.
Okay. Thank you.
For the record, state your name, please.
My name is Steve Apotheker, 1905 Northeast Going Street, Portland. And I'm testifying on behalf of AFSCME Local 3588 Metro and Council 75. The points I would like to make are, one, recycling through the bottle bill creates very high quality materials. And for every 36, for every 10,000 tons of material, we create 36 jobs in recycling. Whereas if it was landfilled, we'd only get one job. And when you consider that the recycling rates for a bottle bill are 80 or 90% compared to 30% for curbside programs or away-from-home consumption, this represents a big gain for us. A little bit closer to home, in California, because they have more bottle bill PET containers, they're proposing a new plant that would create 65 jobs and would take that scrap plastic and put it back into food-grade applications. This is great because right now all the plastic on the West Coast is shipped overseas. So we have no domestic jobs, but increased bottle material can help bring jobs closer to home. The main changes that I would recommend to Senate Bill 707, which we support, is to broaden the charge of the task force. Much of this discussion today has been about tweaking details about how it operates. and we've not spent attention on looking at the vision and values that underlie the Bottle Belt. The current vision of the Bottle Belt is that the distributors and resellers are responsible for containers that are redeemed. The result is that the redemption rate has fallen from 90%, you know, to 78%. So clearly this isn't working. A better vision that reflects current reality is to make producers of beverage containers, the Nestle's of the world, Coke in Atlanta, Pepsi in Purchase, New York, make them responsible for all the containers that are being generated. That means they would look at containers that are littered, and for them to get credit for recycling them, they would have to work closely with Solve. For containers that are put in curbside programs, they would work with our recycling processors to make sure that plastic bottles are recovered. Right now, one out of every five plastic bottles at our MRFs is lost in the paper they send to the paper mills and is landfilled. And since all the MRFs in Metro process recyclables for the city of Oregon, that number is true for the whole state. So, first of all, expanding the bottle takes bottles out of the MRF. They don't have to separate, but if they do stay in, the industry would want to work with the MRFs and perhaps provide funding for equipment that can sort the bottles out of the paper better. So it can be a win-win by expanding the vision of the bottle bill to assume responsibility for all containers. There are four values that I would like to suggest. Accountability. We should have a recycled goal for the containers and consequences for not meeting it. This is a feedback loop so that the bill always stays current. Whenever there are new systems that come along, like curbside, which was not imagined 35 years ago, that new system takes new containers. The producers would work with the curbside folks to reclaim the bottles. Transparency. You've heard a lot of numbers thrown around today. 90% recovery, 78% recovery. What's right? The fact is, 90% is by container number. 78% is by weight. And when you include curbside recovery, another 5%, those two numbers agree. We're recovering by weight about 83% of containers.
I need to adjourn because I have to be in another meeting and there's another committee waiting to start. So could you just close right now, please?
Okay. My last two points are we should have equity as one value and environmental sustainability of the system, and both those points have been covered by Betty Patton. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming here today. I apologize about the rush. Obviously, a lot of people want to provide input, and we appreciate everybody who came here today. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 707A. We will resume testimony on Friday at 1 o'clock in this room. Close the House Energy Environment Committee. Thank you.